7th that the Community Foundation is holding its annual Dixon Spaghetti Dinner, and a good time can be had by all. Adult tickets are only $9. Senior tickets are $7. For a family ticket, it's $26. That's for a family of four. And if you purchase a dinner ticket, it makes you eligible to win a door prize. And we have raffle prizes also, and you get a good deal if you buy a lot of raffle tickets. And we have wonderful prizes donated by Merchants of Morro Bay. And we hope that everyone can come to support the Morro Bay Community Foundation, which provides youth recreational scholarships for the children of Morro Bay, Los Osos, and Cayucas. Thank you.
Okay. Any other? Jenny?
Yes, two announcements. I will not be at the meeting next month. I'll be out of town. And in my absence, I wanted to make sure that the Best of Bay Pooch pageant got its announcement. It's Mother's Day, Sunday, May 10th at City Park from 3 to 5 p.m. Everyone and their dogs are invited to compete. It is a contest, and you'll see posters around town about that. So thank you.
It's Mother's Day, too?
It's Mother's Day, May 10th.
So you bring your mother and your dog?
Either and or both, yes. But we don't use that, yes. It's a good time for all, okay, like Susan's.
Anything else?
Thanks.
Okay, on written communications, we have one written communication here regarding an intersection up on Nutmeg, but nobody is here about it. So we can either put this forward for a future agenda item, or what do we want to do about it?
This letter is also referred to the Traffic Safety Committee, so we'll be taking a look at it at our next irregular meeting of the Traffic Safety Committee, and we'll report back once we've met to the board.
So at this point, this is it?
Yes.
All right, fine. Okay. And next we have the public comments. And I see we have a full house out here and nobody wants to talk. So we'll have the consent calendar, the approval of the minutes from the last meeting. Anybody have any corrections or complaints or adjustments? None? I'll hear a motion to accept. A second?
I second it.
Okay. Any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. At this point, I'd like to move the agenda ahead a few notches and let the city attorney, Rob Schultz, proceed with his Brown Act presentation so that he can go home to his family.
Good evening, Chair, board members. It's a pleasure to be here and give you my annual update to the Brown Act. Over the years, I sometimes come to the board meetings and give this presentation, and other times I actually do it one-on-one with individual board members. But this year, since we seem to have so many new members, we thought it'd be best to do it in the public arena and also let the public kind of know some of the rules and regulations that govern the board. My name's Rob Schultz. I'm the city attorney. I've been the city attorney for Morro Bay since 1998. In 2002, they brought the city attorney position in-house, and we have our own city department since 2002. Basically, I provide legal advice to the elected officials, the city council, the appointed officials, which are all of you, all of the other commissions and boards, and all the staff on a wide variety of legal issues, claims, litigation, ordinances, contracts. And part of it, which is tonight, is the Brown Act and make certain that we follow the Brown Act. And so that's primarily what I'll be going over is the Brown Act and then also some of our own policies and procedures that guide you. Very informal workshop. I like to do it that way. So at any time, if you have any questions, please interrupt. And I'll say the Brown Act really – attorneys have the law and the statutes, which the Brown Act is a statute developed by Ralph Brown in the 1950s, but there's very little cases that interpret the Brown Act. There hasn't been a lot of litigation involved with the Brown Act. So there are subject to some interpretations. You'll find I take a very conservative approach to the Brown Act, while some other attorneys might take a more liberal approach. It's my – position that it's better to err on the side of caution than not to make sure that the public process is followed. So with that, I do have a slide presentation. I provided you with those slide presentations. There's also some that are even excess in there that we might not go over, some of the issues that don't involve you. And I've also provided you with the handbook and bylaws, which is not only your bylaws, but also the bylaws of all your other boards and commissions. A large number of municipalities were not following any open public laws. Backdoor dealings were being done, smoke-filled rooms. It was a very interesting report explaining about all the problems that were happening in local government. So Ralph M. Brown brought forth legislation to make certain that the public's the meetings were held open to the public and that they knew what was going on, more transparent government. Basically, the Brown Act was you're doing the people's business, and how do you make that so that the public knows what you're doing? A couple of quotes taken directly out of it that I feel are important and that you try to remember at all time is councils, which when any time it uses councils, that also applies to you as elected or appointed officials. They exist to aid in the conduct of the people's business. It is the intent of the law that their actions be taken openly and that their deliberations be conducted openly. So that's what they were trying to solve, is the fact that those backdoor meetings were being conducted. It also states, the preamble states, that the people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. The people in delegating authority do not give their public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what is not good for them to know. The people insist on remaining informed so that they may retain control over the instruments that they have created. So I always try to remember those two quotes and remembering that we do have to make certain that the public is aware of what we're doing and how we're doing it, and our decisions are open to them. Brown Act in a nutshell, there's four topics that I think I'll talk about, and I'll go into more depth, but basically the one thing you always have to remember is your agenda that describes each item of business has to be posted 72 hours before a regular meeting. And so we usually even beat that by quite a bit. I'm not sure when your package goes out, but for City Council on a Monday, they're going out today. Even though we have 72 hours, it'd be a Friday, we even try to beat that by an additional 48 hours to make certain that the public has full awareness of what is going on. Sometimes some of the staff reports don't always get done, but I would say 95 to 98% per time, you know, it's that 72 hours plus an additional 48. A meeting occurs when a council majority gathers to hear or discuss city business. And although this says council, you can substitute in your advisory body. So anytime we'll call it a meeting, anytime you guys are gathering together to discuss any city business. And it is unlawful for you at any time as a body to develop a collective concurrence as to any action to be taken outside of that meeting. So only at a meeting can you get together and deliberate and discuss items of city business, and only when that meeting has been properly noticed as an agenda item under the Brown Act. And at every single meeting, the public is entitled to speak to both agenda items or any other city business. There's a little bit of an exception here. I don't know how many times you do special meetings, but at a general meeting, which is your once a month, they can speak to not only anything on your agenda, but anything having to do with any type of city business at all. The difference is if you were going to do a special meeting, then they do restrict your public comment directly to the items that are on your agenda. Even within our city, we rarely do that unless for some reason that special meeting has a short time frame and we've got other business we've got to do and we don't want to have a lot of discussion outside of it. So even at a special meeting, if someone was to get up, we're not in any strict time frame, we'll let them speak on city business outside the special agenda just because it's a time for the public to speak. So rarely would we require that. But the Brown Act does state that at a special meeting, only items that are on the agenda should be discussed. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Rob, I have a question on the Brown Act in a nutshell. In the third bullet down, it's unlawful for a council majority to develop a collective concurrence. Does that mean, being that we have seven people on this board per se, that if someone sees someone around town, and not necessarily that they're talking about action to be taken, but they're talking about future agenda items, they're not talking about concurrence, but they're necessarily discussing, not in any formal way, the business of the board, would that violate?
If it's a majority in four, yes. I would steer away from that.
But
that
well, no, if there's a majority in four, but if there are one or two people.
One or two is fine, and we'll go into that a little bit. And that happens many times where you have allies and you have the same common interests, and you can develop that concurrence amongst yourselves, just not as a majority. And it gets a little tricky, and we'll kind of go into that with some tips that I like to try to impart on you. So we'll go through who's covered, what exactly the meetings are, the agendas and what you have to post and do. And then I'll talk very briefly about closed sessions, although it doesn't entail the Public Works Advisory Body. We'll just do it real quickly because it is in the Brown Act, and then we'll go through enforcement. Who's covered? It's a legislative body, which is the City Council. All advisory decision-making bodies created by formal action. So that's all our formal action committees. If it's on here on this slip or further, so I'll discuss it now. With regards to an ad hoc committee, what you'll have is you'll have limited jurisdiction instead of continuing jurisdiction. You want to do a tree committee. But it's only for one specific purpose, and that's to develop an ordinance or a recommendation for an ordinance. And once that's done, it'll disband. An example is when the council did a subcommittee for the mobile home rent control ordinance. It was limited duration. It was to form a subcommittee of two council members, meet with the public, and develop a recommendation for a mobile home rent control ordinance. Once we were done with that, the committee disbanded, so therefore it was considered an ad hoc committee, limited duration, limited topics, and therefore we didn't have to follow the Brown Act. In that case, we did anyways. We felt it was important. So just because it doesn't meet the Brown Act, we don't have to worry maybe so much about the requirements, but we always still posted notice, still did agendas, and kept meetings. So, you know, even if they are ad hoc, I try to make us comply as much as possible. One thing that happens when it's an ad hoc committee, we don't have any requirements also through our contract to tape those meetings, which helps with the cost. So here's a couple questions I've got that I say, what if a council appoints a Blue Ribbon Citizens Committee? Would that need to fall under the Brown Act? It's been done by formal action, and so they've decided to do a Blue Ribbon Citizens Committee. Yes, that would be because it's formal action, and from that point forward, there would be considered an advisory body. Or if they did it, if you want to separate in there, if they appoint a tree committee or a bike committee, if that would be necessary, then they'd be considered an advisory. It's under formal action, and from that point forward, you would have to comply with the Brown Act. What if the mayor on her own decides she wants to just appoint and have a little subcommittee on the view protection and appoints a few of her neighbors to a board that will get together and maybe make recommendations to the City Council? That doesn't, because it hasn't been done by formal action. If the city manager appoints, it's the same. It has to be done by the council by formal action. Usually it would be by resolution and adoption of the bylaws. We're going through the tourism bid right now that's being approved, and the ordinance is coming forward, and that ordinance talks about an advisory board, and it will be formally appointed. So that one will fall under the Brown Act. But city manager decides to get together five members of the public that are versed in budget issues, that wouldn't fall under the Brown Act because it's not a formal action taken. And this is kind of with the budget. If the city manager rotates two council members to be on a budget team, that would not fall under it. If staff got three of the PWEB members together to meet on tree issues and rotated those members just to discuss, you know, trees or maybe a project that was going on, that would not require the Brown Act. This too also is a little bit different, doesn't really apply, but sometimes you'll find when there's two council members and two maybe Cayucas board members that form a subcommittee, that possibly could, if it's done by formal action, require the Brown Act, even though it's a minority members. It really depends on the subject matter, you know. So there's a tiered look on first looking at formal action, but also looking at exactly what they're going to be doing. And the same with two council members and two planning commission members. Almost always when you go in this scenario and you're taking two members or one member from different boards and creating a different committee, you will have to comply with the Brown Act, because it's no longer called an ad hoc committee, because it's not just from your board. You're taking one from your board and one from the planning commission and, let's say, one from the council. It's not a standing committee because it's not directly underneath your purview, and therefore would probably have to fall under the standing committee. We would look at it and look at exactly what issues you were taking on and how long. But again, as I started out, I take a much more conservative approach and say that's almost always going to require a standing committee. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just now you fall under the Brown Act and you have to make certain that we do the proper noticing in minutes, and it takes more staff time. There's different types of meetings. There's a lawful face-to-face meeting. There's the unlawful chain or wagon wheel. There's non-meetings altogether. So a face-to-face meeting is basically meetings. All meetings must be within the city limits that we have under the Brown Act. You aren't allowed to go and have your meeting outside the city limits unless it involves city property. We could probably notice it and get through one of the exceptions on that. But you can't just decide you want to have your meeting up in Cayucas instead or some other place. There are certain exceptions to that. Maybe do a public comment, they could. And that is acceptable. We've done it, I think, only once or twice in my 12 years with council. What's that?
And it's on a big speakerphone or something?
Yes, you'd be on a speakerphone. Yes,
and now
with, I believe we're streaming, so I think you could even watch it while you wherever you were at. I think we're streaming live, or we're about ready to. So it is possible to even do that. And I think that's more important to look at if you do a lot of traveling and you really want to participate on the board. And you know, we do have requirements of how many meetings you can miss. I think it's. Three unexcused is automatic. Four excused or unexcused then go to the council to make a determination of whether you should remain on the board. So it's something to think about if you seem to have business and family and you're missing it and you still do want to participate. It gives you a way to participate and not be here. Oops, did I do the wrong one? Okay, there we go. The unlawful serial meetings, and this goes to Matt's discussion about being able to talk about it. And you can't develop collective concurrence among a majority outside a meeting. And what the Attorney General has said about that is collective occurrence means the mere exchange of facts and a substantive discussion of the matter. So just talking about whether you're even going to have a meeting this month because there's not enough maybe for the agenda is fine. Or what topics should be on. But the minute you start talking about, you know, whether that project should go forward, the water line, or the specifics about a traffic, you know, issue, then you've gone too far for that. And where you need to be careful on that is your serial meeting. If you see someone out in the public, one of your members, you can certainly talk to them about that. It's only when there's a majority. And the way I kind of combat that is when someone comes up and says, hey, I want to talk to you about that agenda item that's coming up, one of the first things to say to them is, well, have you talked to anybody else about it yet? You know, or, you know, I've already talked to Bill Olson about that, so who have you talked to? So you know there hasn't been four. So start your conversation before you even get into it and realize, you know, well, John said this. You already know you're past your four people, or you're at your four people, and then you're going to have an issue. And you call that what we call a chain or a wagon wheel. One way that it happens is by chain. You know, Susan tells John, John tells Jenny, Jenny tells Bill, Bill tells Matt, and before you know it, all four of you know what everybody's doing because the chain just kept on going and how you're going to vote. And now the public's been left out of the discussion. You come here, you know, the agenda item comes up and you vote yes or no for it, and the public doesn't even know how you've deliberated on it and got to that. And that's what we're trying to make sure doesn't happen. The other way is the wagon wheel, when Susan herself would go and then talk to John, talk to Jenny, talk to Bill, and talk to Matt, and not tell them that I'm already talking to these other people. So technically in that sense, it's Susan that has done all the collective concurrence with everybody, and that's what we're trying to avoid. I rarely see that happening. It's tough with four. I mean, you know, with the council, when it's five, it's easier to get to that majority at three. But in most cases, you guys will realize what's going on and realize right away if, in fact, there's been any major discussions on anything. And these meetings can occur by phone or email, not just, you know, in person to person, but they can occur by email. Email has probably been the toughest one to deal with over the past 6 or 7 years because it happens so much. There's nothing wrong with, you know, information through the email, but you just have to be careful about putting your opinions in there. I mean, if there's a factual issue dealing with a tree or dealing with, you know, sidewalks or anything that's within your purview, and you need to point that out to your staff and you want to CC the rest of your board members, that's fine. But what you want to stay away from is then citing your opinion as to what should be done or shouldn't be done or why something is or is not. There are certain meeting exceptions that are included, you know, individual contacts, which we just talked about. You know, if you're underneath the majority of four, the individual contacts, that's fine to do. Purely social or ceremony gatherings and seminars. There's nothing wrong with all seven of you attending any type of social gathering, ceremonial gathering, seminars. You just can't all get together and then hide out in the back and start discussing any of the agenda items. But going to them all together is fine. We'll get three of our council members to go to the Thursday business forum. And they listen in on that, and you know, sometimes I have to caution them when we start getting into a city council agenda item that's going to be coming forward to them, and they do start stating their opinions. But they're very good at you know, basically more listening, giving facts, what's been on the council, what the council did. It's more of an update than you are, though. One of the requirements you do have is a standing committee. You can only attend as an observer. So in other words, what that means, if in fact there was a standing committee, a tree committee of three of you or four of you, and that was considered a standing committee, we have to comply with the Brown Act. If in fact another member who wasn't on that standing committee wanted to come and just see what was going on at that standing committee, they're able to come, but they can only observe. They can't begin to deliberate on the items that are in front of that standing committee. If we're going to do that, then we might as well not have the standing committee and call the whole meeting together anyways. At that point is the philosophy behind it.
Going back to the public open meetings, what about meetings that are not council meetings or advisory board meetings, but they're open to the public, the sort of maybe word-of-mouth meetings? And if a majority of this board showed up just by chance, how would that be handled?
That's fine, and you can participate in that. I consider that kind of what the Thursday morning business meetings down on the Embarcadero Grill. Those are open, publicly community meetings. They're not city meetings. The city doesn't do the agenda. We don't do any Brown Act. Council participates in them. I caution them to a certain degree if it's something that's going to be, like I said, they can give facts of what the PWEB, what you guys are doing or what they're doing at the council meeting, what's coming up at the next meeting. If they start getting into the specifics, let's say, you know, another roundabout was coming forward, it's fine to say the roundabout is going to be coming here. We need your community involvement. We want to hear from you. If you start talking about the specifics of the project and why you don't like it at that community meeting, I would probably, or hopefully someone's staff would say, you know, you might want to just tell them to come to the meeting because it's going to be coming in front of you. But that doesn't, you know, you definitely can still go to those and participate in almost all the discussions. The ships to reefs, that's been at the meetings, and council has, you know, not expressed their opinion on it yet, and although that's probably outside our jurisdiction anyways, you know, they certainly are supportive of the idea and still, you know, listen to it and ask questions, and factually they're trying to gain knowledge from it. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And again, just a reminder, yeah, you, and any of these different types that we're talking about, when they're open, publicized, and you're talking to everyone else so that they can hear what you're doing, that's fine, but you can't discuss city business among yourselves. So a couple more questions. What if, you know, teleconference is from a Hawaii beach cabana? that would be fine. You can do that. We'll, staff can arrange that. If that's how what you want to do, we can find a way to make that happen. We'd fax you notice or email you notice. You'd post that outside your beach cabana, and you could do it. That's perfectly fine under the Brown Act. What if the city manager briefs council one by one on an issue? And this certainly does happen at times. You know, council comes in on a regular basis with the city manager and meets with her individually. That's certainly fine for the city manager to brief council on an issue one by one. What she can't do is say, and by the way, I just met with council member X 30 minutes ago, and here's how she thinks about this item. If you do that, now you're starting to create that serial meeting that we can't have. But as far as meeting with them, giving them updates, or if you're meeting with staff, if you want to meet one-on-one with staff about an agenda item, that's certainly acceptable. If you're not clear on, you know, what is going on, you can do that, and staff will update you. But, you know, if they have a feel where some of the other council members are going, they won't disclose that to you. And council member briefs council one by one. This is really where you're really going to get in that serial meeting. You won't be able to go there. So no, if the chair wanted to say I'm going to sit down one by one with all the board members and meet with them about a certain issue, we would certainly tell you that's in all likelihood going to violate the Brown Act. And that's kind of what this is. Council member calls all their colleagues, figures out their position, but no one explicitly commits their vote. That's we've got to stay away from that. You know, even if you're not committing which way you're going to vote, if you're stating your opinions and figures out their position, that's going to violate the Brown Act. And we'll get this. You know, you do email colleagues, and that's perfectly okay. Certainly, it would be, you know, we would like staff to be included in any ones that go so we can kind of monitor those and know when we think you are overstepping that Brown Act. But if there's an issue that you find, sidewalks that are being pulled up or something of that nature, because we are somewhat complaint-driven, you know, in those areas. I was down at the business forum last week, and you know, two people told me about an area, so then you know, I pass those on. So that's how we kind of go. So you're our eyes out there. So that's fine to do that, to email. And if you want to just include the colleagues, that would be fine. If you don't, that's fine also. But that's what's where we get in trouble is now when your colleagues all reply to the first email. So and if it's about a certain issue and start to get into the opinions and deliberating process, it's just like a face-to-face meeting, and all on occasion have to tell, you know, council to knock it off, I guess is the easiest way to say it. That's enough. We'll wait until we get to a council meeting. And that's, again, it's when the whole council begins to reply that we have to be careful of. The agenda, it's 72 hours. I spoke about that earlier. Before a regular meeting or for a special meeting, it's only 24 hours. Like I said, I don't believe you guys have too many special meetings, but if it came up and something had to be acted on immediately, a grant or something we needed done, then you could do that. And council does it every once in a while, but not very often. You need to have a description of your agenda items, brief. You know, some of the AGs is 20 words or less. Sometimes we need to work on that a little bit more and make certain that the public does know just by looking at the agenda what that description is, what's going to be looked at, and how, you know, so that they can look at the agenda and decide whether they want to be able to participate in that item. It includes, you got a closed session also has to be posted, so it's the same requirements. And you can't discuss anything that's not on your agenda, or you can't take action on anything that isn't on your agenda. There are certain exceptions to that, though. You can, by majority, for true emergencies or two-thirds votes, decides there's immediate action that needs to be taken and it arose after the agenda was posted. We frown on these. I think I've done them maybe twice in 12 years because it really doesn't give the public the ability to know that decisions are being made. When I usually do that, I even bring it back to a council meeting at the next council meeting to even reiterate it. So if something did really come up and it can't wait, there's just no way to wait for another one or hold a special meeting in 24 hours. It can be. It takes four council members. It would take five of the seven to add it. And I would certainly, if I heard about it the next day, I would completely frown upon it. So it's just not good, because then the public had no idea that it was even going to be on your agenda. And I can't think of a reason why yours wouldn't need to be put on a special meeting where we could at least give 24 hours notice. You need to have the ability for the public to give public comment periods during the agenda part of it. So a couple more questions. Council needs to add an item to a special agenda. Council wants to correct false or abusive comments from the public. You can do both of that. I mean, when I say you can't talk about anything from the public that's not on your agenda, you'll notice at council meetings, or if someone gets up to speak here and has something to say that's not on your agenda, the board is allowed to respond briefly. Council's allowed to respond briefly to any of that. But what we don't want to get into is a long discussion of whatever that issue might be, because it's not on your agenda and the rest of the public didn't know it was going to be on there. Best to say, you know, we'd like this item brought back as a future agenda item, kind of like you got a letter in your package tonight, and that was the proper way to handle it. You know, staff's going to look in it first, provide you with what their opinion is of the situation, and then you can set it as a future agenda item. The wrong way would have been to start discussing it and deliberating on that and coming up with a recommendation for that specific issue without it being on your agenda. Just real briefly on closed sessions, they're strictly scrutinized by the press and the public, and we have to be very careful when we do a closed session. We have to post the notice, and there's only certain items that are expressly permitted by law. And the agenda description is required. It's always on the first page of it. And there are no minutes or tape recordings, but we do have a public comment session before the closed session. So we sometimes do have people that come to our closed session. Our closed session is held over at City Hall instead of here, which is problematic. But we do have a public comment session before the closed session as to the items that are on closed session. Some actions must be reported out. I'm given a hard time because I never report anything out, and that's because I firmly believe that no action should be taken in closed session. You could actually settle a case in closed session and then come to the council meeting and report that the council in closed session settled the litigation between X and Y for $25,000, and that would satisfy the Brown Act requirements. Instead, what I do in that, the direction that's taken in closed session, is direct the city attorney to bring this item back as a open session item at a future council meeting, so that settlement agreement actually comes back as an agenda item as written. And so for any of the things we do, if it's a lease, we do lease negotiations. And so there's the permitted. Let me get to some of these so I can show you. So legal advice on pending litigation, I just told you that. I'll go in and ask them about settlement, and if they do agree to a settlement, I could disclose that right afterwards. I don't. Instead, I bring it back as an agenda item. That's a better way to handle it. The public isn't aware of the terms of that settlement and can see it. During any pending litigation, the lawyer must be present. We can also instruct on real estate negotiations, and this is where a lot of our closed sessions are involved in that we have 50 lease sites along the Embarcadero that are real property negotiations. Most cities don't have those type of real estate negotiations going on, so they don't have quite as many closed sessions as we do. But there's quite a bit that goes on in discussions on lease sites, and when we do have negotiations on lease terms, they could finalize that in closed session, and then I could just announce it out instead. What we do, which is always on our agenda, we approve the assignments. It comes back instead in open session, so people see those as the agenda items, the assignments, the lease transfers, anything of that. Personnel is also performance and evaluations and complaints are also in closed session. You have to give 24 hours notice to the employee if that is to be discussed by council. And labor negotiations, we were heavily involved with all three labor negotiations, fire, police, and SEIU the last couple of years. Those have all been completed, so we don't really have any of those for a little bit. And you cannot set salaries in closed session. That's one thing you can't do. That there's a requirement of that, at least. It says you have to come back and approve those salaries in open session. And so that's kind of how we kind of judge everything instead of, you know, the other items where you, it says the price and terms for real estate can be discussed and determined. We think there should be that, at least I do, that exception that says you can't set them in closed session. They have to be done finally in open session so the public knows. Enforcement, you know, the action can be voided after demand for cure. We had a situation where we actually went back on the Brown Act, and we got a demand for a cure. It had to do with the Sprint cell tower over on what street? No. Can't remember what street it was on, but we actually had a council meeting. The attorney said that we had given improper notice, that it wasn't a detailed enough description to let the public know. I thought it was enough. In fact, the people that were complaining were at the council meeting and opposed the Sprint tower, so their attorney was there and given the opportunity to speak anyways, but still felt that was. Instead of undergoing a lawsuit, what allows you to just cure the defect, we reset it again, redid the notice, and had another hearing a couple weeks later. I felt that was an easier way of curing it than trying to fight a lawsuit, even if you think you're 100% right, you never are in court. So we did that instead, and that's probably most of the time how I would do it if there really is someone that demands that a decision was made without the proper Brown Act noticing. We probably would bring it back on most occasions unless it's just some, you know, reason that there's no way it should be brought back, and the decision maybe has already been carried out. If a situation happened where we signed a contract or something of that nature, but for the Sprint cell tire, they hadn't begun the project yet. And there is criminal prosecution, actually, for Brown Act violations. There's been a few individuals that have been cited, far and few between. And it's really, you look at the state of the mind of the person when you're prosecuting a misdemeanor as to whether they had the intent to deprive the public of information, which is usually not. Usually, if there's a Brown Act, when they realize it, they stop right away. You know, the times when they prosecute is when someone said, yeah, I knew I was depriving the public of information and I wanted to do it anyways. And in fact, if they think the Brown Act has been violated in closed session, there has been times when the court has ordered that there be tape recordings of closed sessions. So that ends the Brown Act part of it. And so what I thought I'd do just real briefly and then finish up is talk about some of our policies and procedures that we have. We have policies and procedures that were adopted when I came in-house. It's probably one of the first things I undertook to do, because what we had done up to that point is had resolution after resolution here and there passed on protocol and policies and procedures of council. And I think it was in 1992 when it was first adopted. And we've gone through various iterations and changes to it. But I want to just point out a couple of them to you so you kind of get a feel on how staff works with council and how staff should work with this board. On placing an item on agenda, we have somewhat of a very complicated process here. Most cities have the one line that says to place an item on an agenda requires a majority of the board or majority of the council. Here in the city of Morro Bay, we allow any council member to place anything on the agenda with, you know, and it's not necessarily within 2 weeks, but if a council member wants to bring something forward, they can do that on their own. The only thing is until you have a majority, you don't have staff's involvement in it. So if someone wanted to do one of the sky ordinances that they have or something else dealing with trees or some other type of ordinance, one could bring that forward as an agenda item and discuss it with the board, but there won't be any staff involvement until there's a majority. And so it's a little bit different than others. I think it was done because they felt they didn't want any minority look to be excluded completely. But you'll see us when we have a declaration of future agenda items, if you're ever listening to that late at night on a council meeting. You know, staff is making sure we know exactly how many are concurring with that future agenda item so we know whether we have to work on it or whether the council member is going to bring it forward themselves. And that whole policy also is in your package if you want to look at it. And this is a guideline for council members dealing with staff, and it's also applicable to the board members, which states that council should recognize that the primary function of staff is to execute council policies and action taken by the council and to keep the council informed. We got away for a few years on doing goal setting and priorities, but we have the last 2 years, and that's really helped staff is to understand exactly what their goals and priorities are under that. And so we really try to keep council focused on what those goals and priorities are, because if we know what we're trying to achieve and aren't always adding items to our functions, we'll get things accomplished. And it talks about council members, which is also applicable to the advisory bodies. You can make routine requests for information through the appropriate department heads. But if they become complex and comprehensive requests, the department heads knows that they have to then go through the city manager. And so the rule of thumb, and I think that's on the following one, is that, you know, if it's an hour of staff time, half hour of staff time, if you want information about something, you know, that's acceptable. If it's a half hour every single day or an hour every day, then it's going to start to add up. But if you have questions, just like any person from the public can request public records documents and can get their questions answered, staff's there for them. But you just have to also remember, you know, we've got other workloads and schedules and department priorities that we've got to do before we can get to everything. And this is, I think, the timely response. You know, we'll make every effort to respond timely and professionally to all the requests made by individual council members, and again, applies to all of you. But at times, when staff knows that if we think if a advisory board member or council member is taking up too much time, they'll know to go to the city manager, and we'll find a way to work it out so we know exactly what they want and how it's best to do it. The request anywhere should be specific and limited in scope so that staff can respond without altering other priorities and with only minimal delay to their other assignments. Request should only impose a one-time work requirement as opposed to an ongoing work requirement. And the response to the request should not require a significant allocation of staff resources, and that's where we've got the issue is in excess of 1 to 2 hours. So that's, again, the direction from council is we are obligated to take that guidance and direction only from the council as a whole or from the appropriate management supervisors. And it's a tug and pull with advisory bodies. I know sometimes you guys feel that, you know, you want projects to come forward, and staff sometimes says, you know, that's not on our priorities. We've got to get it to council. And there's ways to do that. I mean, you know, if there's issues that you don't feel staff is getting to that you think are very important, obviously one way to do it is to go to your elected officials and talk to the council member, because if they've got it on their council and a future agenda item and it's discussed, you know, we'll discuss with them where does that fit in your priorities. But if something that's not on their priorities needs to be higher up, then that certainly can be discussed. And I'll give you an example of it that I don't think some of the harbor advisory board members are happy about, but they want to do a news rack ordinance along the Embarcadero, and they have made a recommendation to do that. That went forward at the goals and priorities, and it didn't make the goals and priorities on that list. It's on my list of projects to do, but it's one that I probably will not get to towards the end of the year. If they had made it a priority, I knew I would be working on that right now. It's a little bit complicated ordinance, and that news racks are regulated under the First Amendment, so you got to make certain that you draft a proper ordinance that's going to withstand the legal challenge. Paso Robles got sued over theirs, so we have to be careful. So it's going to take up time, and I'm sure the Harbor board members, you know, want that done. It was a high priority for them, but it wasn't. And so, you know, when I get the email that says, are you working on it? When is it going to be done? You know, I said, no, I'm not working on it right now. You know, you need to talk to your elected officials if you want it higher up on the totem pole. So that's how usually staff tries to work those, and we try to balance all the needs of the different advisory boards and our daily work. And just a little bit on that again, the role of the city staff persons as to advisory. Staff support and assist may be provided or made available to advisory bodies. Do not have supervisory authority over city employees. And really that applies to not only advisory but city council. They don't have supervisory authority over any city employees. There's only two employees with the city that the council can hire and fire, and that's myself and the city manager. We're both at will. But all the rest fall into the city manager's jurisdiction and supervisory authority. While you may work very closely with the advisory body, staff members remain responsible to their immediate supervisors and ultimately to the city manager and council. So you just have to balance that and work together. You know, it's worked together over the years, but if there are any, issues that you need to discuss, I'm also available. I can sometimes mediate and help out on issues that if you don't feel you're getting things done or you want to try a different avenue, we certainly can accomplish that with staff. Again, remembering that staff is a little overwhelmed with projects right now going on and everything else, but we're also here to help reach the goals and opportunities the city has. And I think that's it. Any questions? Anytime I'm available, if a question comes up, please. I have an open door policy. I'm in City Hall. Stop on by. Stop in the office. Say hello anytime you come in if you pick up your package and want to. The only thing I didn't speak about is the Fair Political Practice Act, which is conflict of interest. And that might come up time to time. Probably the number one thing that would alert you is if a project is within 500 feet of your property or your business. At that point, if an item was coming forward, you should contact staff or contact me. And that's primarily the only one I would probably say you really have to watch out for. An example that came up was, for another one was a community promotions director. We're going out to bid on a real estate broker for the Cloisters property and called and said, I might be bidding for that. Would that be a conflict of interest? And so we went through the process of looking at that yes, that possibly could be in that if, in fact, she was on council, it certainly would be because the ultimate contract that might be entered into, she would be voting on. But as a member of, wasn't community promotions, it was
Public Works Advisory Board.
Yes, it's Public Works. Sorry about that. So
it was me.
Yeah. So I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Go on.
And so with that scenario, that contract would not be coming in front of this board at any time for approval. So there was no conflict of interest. But we can take you through those steps on a specific situation, and I really appreciated that coming forward before any issues come up later on. And it's usually dealing with business interests or property interests where there could be the conflict. And if any of you were general contractors, yes, then we might have an issue if you were going to do general contracting work specifically for the city. We'd have to look at the different steps. There's an 8-step that you go through under the Fair Political Practice Act to determine whether there's a conflict of interest. So,
Rob, I do have a question. As what is the proper procedure or what are the regulations if a PWAB member wanted to go speak to another body, political body, be it the city council? Do they have to identify themselves as a member of PWAB, even if they're not necessarily talking about an item in front of PWAB?
I like always starting out with the fact that you are your name, that you are a member of the PWAB, but you're speaking as an individual citizen. I think that's I'm a member of PWAB and I am speaking on behalf of PWAB if they've sent you directly there by a majority. That is by far the best way to do it, and that's how most of ours will do it.
I have a call for you. I've been involved with this public education for many years and had to put up a lot with the Brown Act, and this has been one of the most comprehensive presentations I've ever heard. Thank you.
Thank you.
Will the other committees be receiving this education? or not?
Yes. I met with, and I won't be going to each one giving the presentation. You only get the live presentation. For the other ones, I'm meeting with them individually. I've met with two, and the two Harbor board members haven't come in yet, so I kind of get them individually in the office and do it there. So, and if any of you have any questions, again, open office policy and door policy, and you can come in anytime.
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess. Thank you, Mr. Schultz. So we'll proceed with the meeting. Back to the straight agenda. The next item is the director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to highlight a significant project that's going to be starting, the Morro Bay Boulevard repaving project. Our roundabout contractor is performing that work as a change order for the roundabout project. They're going to commence work on Monday, probably starting up at Kern with some demolition work as part of the repaving project, because it is a significant overlay project. We have to do the associated ADA requirements along with that. So I believe there's 23 curb ramps to be replaced with the project. There will be sidewalk repairs, curb and gutter repairs, and then the paving. We're also coordinating that work with the project at 600 Morro Bay Boulevard, the new mixed-use project there at Shasta and Morro Bay Boulevard, so they can get their perimeter improvements in, and then we'll pave to those new improvements. And they started their demolition work today on that project. Also, our street crews have been quite busy with pothole patching around town, and they've done a great job of trying to catch up, but unfortunately they'll probably never actually catch up. But they've done quite a few in the last couple of weeks, and there's a listing here. I won't go through the entire list, but compliments to Walter Rosa and our lead person, Jim Mooney, for getting on those potholes. I think that's really all the highlight. Oh, other than our stormwater permit, as I believe I said last meeting, we did receive word back from the Regional Water Quality Control Board that they have now issued us a permit. It was effective February 17th. We had some corrections to make to our stormwater management plan. Those corrections have been submitted, and the final plan is or will be posted on our website. So it's a plan for the first 5 years of stormwater management. We prepare an annual report. The plan itself has been reviewed by this committee last year. And just in a nutshell, the stormwater management plan is really a device to set up all the procedures that need to get done for stormwater management. So in the first year, an example of some of the things we'll be doing is developing a IDDE, or illicit discharge and detection and elimination ordinance. So setting up what can or can't be discharged to the city's storm drain system. The city's storm drain system also includes the street, because the street flows to storm drains that flow to either the bay, creeks, estuary. Another example will be public education and outreach, developing the brochures and information that will go out to the general public and commercial enterprises on best management practices for stormwater, developing and refining our interface with various local contractors on their erosion control practices. That sort of thing will be the first year. Culminating in year five, we'll have to come up with a new, my favorite new buzzword, a hydro modification control plan, basically replicating the rainfall runoff patterns of the natural ground and trying to set up regulations so that we try to mimic those. So if it ran off before there was construction, then it can run off. If it infiltrated into the ground, it should still be infiltrating into the ground. So those are my highlight items, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, Rob, the repaving of Morro Bay Boulevard and the sidewalks, I noticed on several of the trees, the roots are kind of bulging out. And comments?
When tree wells were originally constructed in a lot of Morro Bay, they're constructed way too small for the size of tree that was picked to go into those tree wells. So we'll be enlarging tree wells, but always maintaining a minimum of 5-foot sidewalk width around that tree there. So there's plenty of room for pedestrians to use that facility as needed. So especially where it's, we can't do everything with the $400,000 that the state gave us for Morro Bay Boulevard. We're going to do the most we can with the money that we have. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, as far as the perimeter improvements, are the curb ramp upgrades. Next would be trip and fall hazards to get rid of those, and that would include those bulged up sidewalks around the trees. As money is available, we will open up other tree wells also along the project.
Thank you.
Also, if I could, you just kind of partially answered my question, because it kind of goes along with what Jenny's saying. Is what the cost of the entire project additional is $400,000, or is that just what the state allocated? What's the scope in terms of the roundabout and then down the boulevard? And I think we're going to go further down Main Street, aren't we?
Eventually, we'll try to get down Main Street. The funding for this additional paving work is through our Proposition 1B money from the state. We are a small enough population where we get the minimum amount, which is $400,000 that first year, nothing after that. So we'll get our $400,000. It's meant to be used on what are known as FAU roads or federal aid roads, so arterials and collector streets. Council chose the two projects that they wanted to spend that money on last year, would Morro Bay Boulevard and Main Street, the section of Main from Surf to the southbound on-off ramps on Highway 1. The cost to do just Morro Bay Boulevard is about $135,000. The amount we got from Prop 1B is $400,000, so we'll be dipping into the streets portion of our Measure Q funds to come up with the rest of that money to do. We've also added to the ARRA package basically the stimulus money. I can't remember what ARRA stands for anymore. Recovery Act, I know the last two letters are for. But we've added Main Street as one of the projects using for that money. We've also added North Main bike lane improvements for that project. But it's $400,000 in addition to the existing roundabout contract. The existing roundabout cost approximately $1.1 million from beginning to end. And although we're not ended with it yet, they have some cleanup items yet to do. The additional work is about $400,000.
Oh, that makes me think. I did notice the flags are still there at the roundabout. Remember how we wanted to keep them at the roundabout? I noticed that they were in their canisters. I don't know how often you've been replenishing them, but they were there the other day.
Yes, they are still there, and Board Member Brantley and I were out there last Friday adjusting the height of the canisters so that they do meet ADA requirements. They are within 40 inches from the ground because we did receive a call that somebody was using one, and they identified that they couldn't reach the flag canister, And, you know, I may have done the typical thing when I went out there. I said, well, you know, that looks about good. I can, you know, I'm kind of short. I can see it. And I wasn't very mindful of others. And it has an added benefit of now they're low enough where kids can actually grab them and use them as they cross the street.
And they are using them.
I had another question, though.
Go ahead.
Rob, I have another question. If you can, I know you don't always talk about the desal plant. Can you give us an update? I read what's here about the permitting process, the delivery, and getting the next part of the desal plant online. Have you? Can you add any of that?
I believe the contractor is nearly complete with this phase of the work. But I really can't really add any more than what's on the I overheard that mention that the contractor is just about done and ready to move off site from that work.
Everybody satisfied?
Rob, who's going to be maintaining all the plant material and weeding and such at the roundabout?
The Recreation Parks Department has been tasked with that, maintaining that landscaping after the initial contract period for the installing landscaper, and that's 90 days after acceptance. So we haven't accepted the improvements yet, so the landscape contractor will be maintaining that landscaping. There's been a couple of groups that have expressed interest in maintaining that, one being the Firefighters Association. They would like to adopt that as one of their projects. So we'll be talking with them more about the details on, you know, what level of maintenance they feel comfortable in doing and what level of maintenance will still have to be done by our own recreation and park staff. Thank you.
Susan?
Yes, Rob. Were you going to also be talking about the trees, about the deadline for pruning trees?
I can mention that we're still under our, for public trees, no removals or pruning for trees within the right-of-way between February 1st and June 30th of every year by ordinance. July 1 or June 30th. Maybe it's stated in the ordinance July 1. I know it's still the end of June, though. We still periodically do trim and remove trees if they are a hazard. For example, low trees that are hanging over the sidewalk or the bike lanes, we'll trim those, make an observation to make sure there's no nesting in the trees. Also, we'll remove hazard dead trees during this time of year. There's one up on Estero that was reported to me as being completely brown now and in danger of dropping limbs. So we'll be talking with some of our local arborists and getting a price for removing that tree before it causes some damage. The regulations for trees outside of the right-of-way are a little bit different. They're were adopted by ordinance in our city policy. Still don't want them removed during the nesting season, but residents still can prune their trees on private property.
Thank you.
Excuse me. While I'm here on trees, City Council did adopt a resolution at the last City Council meeting commending the Adopt-a-Tree program. An item that still has to go back is the formation of the tree subcommittee or tree committee. Board member Christoph Jones, we're waiting for her to get back from her trip to sit down and have a sit down with Mr. Schultz regarding the exactly how we will form this committee because it potentially will be a new Brown Act committee, and we want to make sure that we get everything right on the formation of that committee.
Okay. Now, anybody else? I noticed that attached here are three different versions of the notice for spring cleanup, April 6th to 10th. Is there any significance there? I noticed the copy is different. You want us to any comments or selections, or what do we just look at them or do something about it?
I'm not sure what Ms. Burlingame had in mind with the three different versions of this.
Well, if I may jump in, one is simply an announcement that April 6th through 10th is spring cleanup week, and that Morro Bay Garbage will be cleaning up extra garbage. And then another announcement is bulky items can be removed for a fee during that week, and it's a reduced rate fee. It's not the normal fee, so they're giving a discount during the week of April 6th through 10th for bulky items that you want to clean out of your garage or attic or whatever. And then there's another announcement that no hazardous materials will be taken, but those can, as usual, be disposed of for free at the hazardous waste facility on Saturdays from 11 to 3 at 160 Atascadero Road. That's what I thought was the point of it.
I believe you've caught that they are three separate flyers, not a choice between the three of them, but all three of them convey a different portion of the spring cleanup message.
Well, that's you'd have to see all three of them to have all the information.
So that makes me think, all right, this is April 6th. This is their machine, so somehow, I mean, what's going on to let people know? Is this going out with the...
Typically, there's an ad in the Bay News and Sun Bulletin. It's right after water bills go out, so it'll be as part of the... I don't know if they're going to print it on the bottom of the water bill or if it'll be a separate stuffer in the water bill, but that typically happens with the spring cleanup. And I was probably remiss. I should have made an announcement like Ms. Burlingame usually does when she's here that please participate in the spring cleanup. It's a great time to do that spring cleaning and either get rid of large items at a reduced cost or not so large items, but a lot of them for free.
Right.
Yes, it was announced in the water bill. It was printed on the water bill months ago, and I think there have been reminders also. When is the garage sale weekend? That's what I'm trying to figure out. The garage sale weekend becomes before. Is that correct?
Yes, the citywide garage sale or yard sale is the 4th and the 5th, Saturday and Sunday, before that Monday, April 6th.
Okay, it's the 4th and the 5th, that weekend of the 4th and the 5th, because I had a question here. It says, to arrange for pickup of bulky items, you must first call the garbage service and gives the phone number no later than 4 o'clock p.m. on Friday, April 3rd. Does that allow for time for people who might have bulky items left over from garage sales to have that picked up? Because you don't know what you'll get rid of at the garage sale, and then you might have a sofa that you thought you'd get rid of at the garage sale, and you wouldn't be able to call for bulky item in time. Am I getting that correct?
It appears so that would be correct, that you would need to arrange for that pickup. But I think I would still call the garbage company and either call them before your garage sale and say you might have something, or tell them that you do have something, and you can always maybe I shouldn't say this, but cancel that request if you end up selling at the garage sale. One of the things we want to avoid, though, is something that our street crew has to do is sometimes those couches get deposited in the street, and we'll get a call that somebody's left their couch in front of somebody else's property, so then we need to dispose of that.
And then I think it's important to let everybody know if they're not going to be reading the paper or getting those notices in their bills, is that they have the limit of 2 cubic yards up to 12 trash cans of stuff that they can get rid of, and that's a sizable amount.
That's a lot.
And so I know, as sometimes I don't get the notices and I forget, and I notice in the years when I do remember, it's always nice to know how much you can actually have taken away. So that's up to 12 cans of stuff.
Maybe I'll jump in one more time and give the phone number. It's 543-0875. That's the phone number for the Morro Bay Garbage Company. Again, it's 543-0875, and they're happy to help you schedule the removal of those large, bulky items. And also, I called them earlier today, and they answered all sorts of questions for me about what is large and bulky, how much would it normally cost if I did it before or later, that sort of thing.
Anyone else? Okay, then we'll proceed to the next item is new business. So we have the election of officers for the next year, a chairman and a vice chair. So I guess we'll take nominations for chairman. Anybody?
I nominate Bill to continue as chairperson.
I second that.
Any other nominations?
I've got a funny question before I nominate you. Do you want to do it?
Yeah, I'll do it. I've done it, I think, three times before.
Okay.
Getting worn out on it. Anyway, we can do it.
I move nominations to be closed.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, how about now we take nominations for vice chair?
I nominate Matt.
Okay.
Now, before I say anything, can we nominate someone who's not here?
I believe so. That's how I've been received that honor in the past on different boards.
Well, I say that because I know June had said that she would do it. She wasn't necessarily overly ecstatic about doing it. But since she's not here, I mean, she can always have the job back. But I'll accept the nomination.
I'd like to second the nomination of Matt.
Okay, we have a second. Any others? No other nominations. Okay, no other discussion. All in favor?
Matt, would you be willing to do this position?
I am willing.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That's it. Thank you. Now we proceed on to old business, of which we have none. So future agenda items. Anyone have any future agenda items they want to bring up?
I would appreciate knowing what all these different letters stand for. I've been sitting here trying to figure out what ADA is and the different ones. I think I got that one figured out. But it'd be helpful if we could have just the initials and what it stands for.
Yes. I know that's been brought up before, and we're trying to eliminate or define an abbreviation in the staff report if at all possible. And I was remiss in not defining ADA in some of my discussions. And it stands for the American with Disabilities Act, and it's for to make accommodations for basically for everybody in as much as possible in your constructed works.
I just thought if I had a cheat sheet, it would help me a whole lot as I'm going through this.
And I might add on that, jump in on that, PWAB stands for Public Works Advisory Board, and I've taken it upon myself to always say Public Works Advisory Board instead of PWAB. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And I encourage us all to do that.
Well, yes, we do have a lot of initials, don't we, out there? Anyway, any future agenda items? Anything anybody's going to put on here?
Yes. I don't know if this works or not, but I noticed that in the public service office that you have so many helpful announcements about saving water, tips for people to save water. And I also saw some things that I hadn't been aware of, such as watering only twice a week and watering not after 8 o'clock in the morning, not between the hours of 8 and 4. I'm just wondering if we could, because energy saving starts at home, if we could somehow keep that in the forefront of our meetings at certain times if we have announcements. Or I know you had this wonderful public service newsletter that came out in the, was this in the water bill or?
Yes, I believe it went out in the water bill.
And also things like, you know, there are going to be many incentives for adding solar to people's houses for energy conservation and things like that. I personally, as a property owner, would like to know how I could have that information and when to act on it. I don't know if that makes much sense, but
maybe having a brief in the director's report, an FAQ, frequently asked questions section, and we could maybe have the water savings tip of the week or tell people where they could get more water savings tip, like on our website. Especially on our new revitalized website that is coming soon.
That'd be great.
You know, that is a good item because there really ought to be some way of informing people because, I'm on the Water Bill Review Board. We had our meeting today. One of the cases we had, a woman had a leak, but she lives alone, and it's a normal-sized lot. And her average water usage, not, this wasn't the leak, but her average water usage is 15 to 18 units a month. And you know, it really ought to be around 6 or 7. And so I've seen this a number of times because we have the full report there on what the usage has been for about the last year. And so a lot of people are unaware of this and they don't know that they shouldn't be, that normal usage is maybe 6 or 7 units for a family, you know. So we can get that out there. So we can get something going here. Anything else? Anybody else?
We have a future agenda talking about the San Jacinto intersection discussion I brought up at last meeting. Rob, because it's on the future agenda item, does that mean talked about it last meeting? It'll be on for the next meeting. Is that what's going on here?
Yeah, I think we had discussed that we didn't want to put it on for this meeting because of the Brown Act discussion. So that would be something that we could put on the agenda for the next meeting. And what I can do is get you some basic information about what has gone on in the past on San Jacinto. Perhaps we can look at some traffic counts on San Jacinto and have a discussion about that. That would be a good starting point for it, I think.
I just have a question still as a new person to this board. We did receive in our packet this letter about these stop signs, and I heard you say that it went to another group.
It has gone to the Traffic Safety Committee, which is made up of myself, the fire chief, and the police chief. We meet once a quarter, typically, maybe more often if there's an issue. We'll probably meet sometime middle next month. We'll discuss this item as one of the items. We get questions from the public on stop signs. We've been going over Chapter 10 revisions, which is the vehicle code in our municipal code. So we've been discussing that. That's going to council sometime in late April, I believe, for revisions to the municipal code's traffic section and speed limits. So Mr. Schultz and Mr. Durohand are bringing forward, although it does affect some public works issues because currently the council is vested with the authority of setting no parking, stop sign locations, yield sign locations. This new Muni Code provision will vest that authority with the city engineer because it is an engineering decision to be made regarding placement of stop signs, because there are certain criteria that has to be met in order to make that an enforceable stop sign and not cause more of a traffic hazard.
So it just kind of came to the Public Works Advisory Board sort of erroneously?
Well, no. The person that wrote this directed it to, they addressed it to the Public Works Advisory Board. I intercepted it and also passed it along to the Traffic Safety Committee meeting. So once that staff meeting discusses it, we'll bring it back as an item for the Public Works Advisory Board.
Thank you. Thank you. That clarifies it. Thanks.
You know, Jenny brings up something because I think it was the last meeting she had brought up talking about the Radcliffe area and Main Street. Now, is just for to reiterate for the public, when they have an issue about a stop sign or whatnot, their proper chain of coming forth to the city is first to come to PWAB, write a letter to the city engineer, city plan. How do they go about doing that?
Currently, under Chapter 10 of the City Municipal Code, the City Council sets those stop sign locations. That may change in the future. But currently, it would probably be best addressed by they could start with addressing that to staff, and we could look in to see what's done and been done in the past at location, doing the something called a warrants analysis. So you use the traffic engineering guidance to see if it warrants a stop sign. And that's the engineering side of it. Currently, it would ultimately have to go to council to place that stop sign, but that way it exists now. If the person really isn't satisfied with sort of the engineering decision, then we would suggest that they escalate that up by bringing it first to PWAB. PWAB would make the Public Works Advisory Board. Would make their recommendations to City Council on that placement of the stop sign.
Anybody else? Any comments? Anything in here? If not,
congratulations to our new leaders.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are adjourned.
Here, Jenny. Thank you. Yeah. I was going to, and I didn't get to it. Did you? What'd you think? What was it?